the length of the bull run and, you know, and whether it's over. Yes, it has been going on for 9 or 10 years now, but it is important, or 9 years, but it is important to understand that it's come off a very, very low base. So at the bottom of the GFC, you could argue that price has overreacted to the downside, and consequently, you know, it takes longer to get to a point where it's overvalued. So it might be that it still has some time to run. We just don't know. What we do know is that on an individual company level, there were some frighteningly expensive stocks in the market. And I wrote an article for The Australian in August, which was published in September.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy, with your host, Annie Nelson. An Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. Anne will also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
Hi, it's Anne Nelson, your host for today's show. For the investors out there, things have been getting rather expensive lately. How do you find good value? And are stocks overpriced? For the do-it-yourself investors, we need all the help we can get. So I like asking experts to see what they're doing when things have become rather extended. Today, my guest is Roger Montgomery. And Roger is from Montgomery Investment Management. He is the Chief Investment Officer and has previously had a successful career as an analyst, strategist, fund manager, and public company chairman. Roger is a best-selling finance author. He has a regular blog and now has his own podcast show, Value.able, teaching us how to value stocks and buy them for less than they're worth. Roger has a team of 18 highly experienced and focused individuals dedicated to the twin goals of sound stewardship and personal service. Committed to delivering above benchmark returns over the long term, Montgomery Investment Management has an impressive $1.5 billion under management. It is owned by its staff, who are also investors in the funds. They are based in Sydney and also have an office in New York. Hi, welcome to the show, Roger Montgomery. How are you, Roger?
I'm very well, Anne. Lovely to be with you.
Thanks very much.
It's a pleasure.
There's been a bit of a hiccup in the market lately in America, and it seems as though it automatically flows on to Australia. Is this the end of the bull market, or do you think we're still in an uptrend?
I think it's fair to say that the conditions that existed that drove many asset prices to records over the last few years, those conditions have probably ended, and sentiment about their continuation is changing as well. So I think if that was a precursor to the end of a bull market, then we have those conditions.
What we're really going to talk about today was overpriced stocks. And I see that you have started your own podcast show on Value.able.
Yes.
What was your reasoning for starting your own show?
I was invited to by a former producer for the ABC who's now running a podcast channel, and he's got a group of experts from various fields that he interviews, and they submit podcasts, and he asked me to participate.
Right. Okay. Well, I've had a look at number 5, so I'll have to work my way backwards to number 1.
Yeah, that's right.
So they looks like they're going to be a valuable tool for value investors.
Yeah, look, we hope so. The idea is that we're taking the themes out of the book, Valuable, and expanding on those, and then peppering the podcasts with observations about what's going on in the market at the moment, and talking about individual companies sometimes, but perhaps less frequently than just talking about general market conditions.
A lot of us are making our own decisions. We're do-it-yourself investors. Well, we are for now, anyway, until we're too old.
That's who the podcast is directed to make sure that people are well informed and understand some of the risks and some of the dangers of investing directly, and we're trying to make that job a little bit easier without giving advice.
Would you be able to talk to us about what you think about the overpriced stock situation?
No, very happy to. Firstly, your earlier question was about the length of the bull run and and whether it's over. Yes, it has been going on for 9 or 10 years now, but it is important, or 9 years, but it is important to understand that it's come off a very, very low base. So at the bottom of the GFC, you could argue that price has overreacted to the downside, and consequently, it takes longer to get to a point where it's overvalued. So it might be that it still has some time to run. We just don't know. What we do know is that on an individual company level, there were some frighteningly expensive stocks in the market. And I wrote an article for The Australian in August, which was published in September. And we put together a group of companies that included A2 Milk, Xero, the accounting software company, WiseTech Global, Appen, Altium, Afterpay. And when we looked at the market capitalization of those companies, they came to about $30 billion. But when we looked at the combined revenue of those companies, the combined revenue of those companies was only $2 billion. And the aggregate profit was about $245 million. And of that, A2 was responsible for $131 million. So if you removed A2 from the portfolio, you had a portfolio of companies that were trading on about 490 times earnings. In other words, if their earnings didn't grow, it would take you 490 years to be paid back for your investment. Now, that is just ludicrously expensive. And perhaps unsurprisingly, since that article was published, the shares have come off. In some cases, they've fallen by 40%, and in others, the order of sort of 24, 25%. So the question now is it time to wade back in? Are they cheap enough? The question requires an understanding of value. You need to know whether or not you think they're cheap, and in order to come up with an estimate of value, you need to have some, I guess, educated view on their growth prospects and whether or not their earnings are going to grow. Now, some of those companies that I listed don't earn any money. For example, Afterpay and WiseTech, Afterpay and Xero, they're not earning any money at the moment. So it's very difficult to estimate when they're going to start making a profit and how quickly that profit could actually grow. And it's also the case that many businesses have enjoyed fairly buoyant conditions in their sectors and in the economy, and that's been a function of abundant and very cheap money. Those conditions are changing as well now. So we're seeing the Federal Reserve pull back on quantitative easing. If anything, it's actually now accelerating its quantitative tapering. Low interest rates are no longer as low as they once were. They're rising. And so the cost of money and the amount of money in the financial system is being reduced while the cost of money is going up. So the conditions that existed that pushed those companies to giddy heights is changing underneath those companies. So while the share price has dropped, it's very dangerous to assume that by buying it because it's fallen, it's going to go back up to where it was. And that's because the conditions that drive those companies' earnings might be changing now.
That's very interesting.
Mm.
So what should we be keeping in mind then? We're in a bit of a wait and see time, I suppose, now, to see how long it goes.
Yeah, I think, look, that's always the case. Nobody really knows. And so that's why we always come back to two things, quality and value. And we want to identify companies of high quality, and we want to be able to identify when they're trading at a level that we think is cheaper than what they're intrinsically worth. And if we do that consistently over time, and when you can't find companies that meet that criteria, you're willing to hold some cash, you should do reasonably well.
So when's the best time to buy? Are we waiting until, we've already had all the market reports have come in, and I know some companies go up and down after the reports come out, and they won't be out again, what, for another 6 months?
Although their half-yearly reports they'll report on their half-yearly results in February. They'll start reporting in February. And so we'll have a better idea for some companies and how they're performing. It might be worth watching very carefully what's going on in the retail sector, particularly the discretionary retail sector. And also it's worth keeping an eye on furniture retailers and any company that supplies goods for renovations or for fitting out new properties, because as we've seen in the official statistics, the turnover of properties in Australia is slumping. So there's less properties being transacted. And when fewer people are buying new homes, fewer people buy furniture to put in those new homes. And so we think that the outlook for some of those furniture retailers, the likes of Harvey Norman and Nick Scali, for example, Beacon Lighting might be another one, we think conditions for those companies might actually become more difficult than they've already reported conditions are. So at the full year results, we saw Beacon Lighting, Harvey Norman, Nick Scali describe conditions for the first quarter of 2019, and they said it was very tough on the East Coast, and I wouldn't be surprised if it gets even tougher. We're not seeing an opportunity yet to invest in those types of companies. However, if the market overreacts to conditions that are deteriorating, it could be that prices get low enough that they become attractive even if we're buying them early and haven't picked the absolute bottom in terms of their business conditions. Other businesses that we think are worth watching closely are the banks. We know from their full-year results that they're expecting arrears to rise. We know that credit growth, so the growth in the number of loans that they're extending, is slowing. And we know that their interest margins, the profit margin that they make in the core part of their business is under some pressure. Having said that, though, the share prices have now fallen to such an extent. In fact, they're off between 20 and 30% since the early part of 2015. They're now pricing in pretty dire conditions. And if that doesn't eventuate, then the current prices might represent value. But, of course, conditions could get worse. And if they do, then prices may react to that. And if they do, that could be a good thing for a net buy. You could buy some more at a cheaper price, potentially.
Yes, because we don't want our capital base to erode by buying too early.
Well, unfortunately, you can't get that right, and you're never going to get that right. So you need to make sure that you adjust the amount of money you invest in each position so that if it does fall further, you might have the capacity to add to that position. But the first principle is, you know, stick to quality, stick to businesses that generate high rates of return on their capital, that have relatively little debt, that have bright prospects, and then you want to buy them at a reasonable price. If you don't mind me sharing, we have a blog at rogermontgomery.com where we discuss market conditions and occasionally companies, and there's a library of articles there, and you can use the search bar to search for particular companies that we've discussed in the past as well. And you can post questions there for the team here to answer.
Do you have to be a member to access that information?
No, it's all free.
I've been talking to people that are looking into the future and saying that traditional consumer businesses are under pressure with the rising of, like, IKEA and Amazon in the retail space, and that the future belongs to businesses that haven't even been invented yet.
That's always the case, isn't it? That's an interesting statement. So that the future belongs to companies that don't exist yet. I think that's true. Or some portion of the future belongs to them. You know, and people will lose money in some of those businesses in the future too. There are technologies that we probably haven't even envisioned that will be developed and will change the course of human history, just as new technology has done in the past. It's really important that investors know that you can get very excited about how technology might benefit you and your life, but it's not always the case that that translates to profits for the companies involved in providing that technology. So if you look at vehicle manufacturers, for example, car manufacturers, you know, there's been more than 1,000 US car manufacturers, but today only one exists that makes a profit and wasn't bailed out during the global financial crisis, and that's Ford. So it's not an easy business to make money from, and consumers benefit from the continued advancement in technology.
The big companies and Amazon now opening up in Australia seems to put most retail businesses under pressure.
Yeah, look, it is the case that more consumers are buying online and there's a global marketplace for most products, and so you can compare prices much more easily. So there's a lot more transparency in prices now, and that means that buyers who were once beholden to the Myers or the David Jones of the world just had to pay the price for the product that was given to them because there was no alternative unless they travelled overseas. Well, now they can order something from Amazon or eBay or any one of the, you know, global fashion houses. They can buy directly online and they can have it at their front door, you know, in a few days' time. And if that doesn't fit, they can put it back in an envelope that's already been provided and send it right back and get a refund. So the online buying experience is improving and the convenience is certainly a lot better than having to get out in the rain or in the searing heat to go shopping. And so it's difficult for, you know, for brick and mortar retailers to compete with that.
It changes which sector is up each part of the year as well.
We don't really concern ourselves too much with that. We're interested in individual businesses. We're, of course, interested in businesses with bright prospects, and so that's where a conversation about the sector or the theme that's influencing the sector might be relevant. Ultimately, though, it comes down to an individual company whose shares you're buying, and you want to know whether or not that one is, you know, going to be the winner amongst its peers, perhaps, and you want to know that you're buying it at a reasonable price.
So would you like to share some of the criteria that you use to determining the reasonable price?
Of course. Yeah, so you know, probably the simplest way to describe it is you're paying some multiple of the book value of the business, and the multiple that you pay for that book value is arguably determined by the profitability of that book or the profits that can be generated on that book. So, for example, if you had a business with a dollar of equity per share and it was generating a 10% return on its equity, it's probably not worth as much as a company that you believe can sustainably generate a 20% return on its equity. So you'll pay more for a more profitable business. Its value will be higher. Of course, that doesn't mean the share prices can't fall, but they're worth more if they're more profitable. So if they've got more equity and they've got the ability to generate higher returns on that equity, and they tend to be more valuable, provided it's sustainable.
I was impressed with A2 Milk for a long, long time, but it's, like you said, it's been expensive. They seem to have very good profits.
I think their shares have come off about 30 or 40% as well, or might be 30%. So when you said that you were impressed by them, was that because the shares were going well?
Yes, the shares were going well and they seem to have a good exposure to China.
Yeah, so it's really important not to take your cue from the share price. So it's often the case that people think if the share price is going up, it's a good business, and if the share price is going down, it's a bad business. And that is often the case because markets tend to be reasonably efficient, but it's not always the case. And so sometimes the share price going up can reflect enthusiasm for the story that perhaps might not be justified by the performance of the underlying business. So it is important not to take your cue from prices. What you want to do is take advantage of the price rather than be influenced by it.
To summarise what we've been talking about, overpriced stocks.
There are still a lot of overpriced stocks in the marketplace today. So you know, an example of a company that has really fallen out of favour recently would be a company called Corporate Travel Management. Sentiment has shifted dramatically towards that company, and that's been a function of the fact that a hedge fund came out with a report questioning the integrity of management and also questioning the reporting transparency or the transparency of the reporting. And so, you know, what came out of that was the share price collapsed. Arguably, they could have, you know, they could have disclosed the change in their policy for revenue recognition a bit better. They probably did overstate their footprint, and they did call some of their technology patented when in actual fact it wasn't patented, but it is proprietary. And so what's happened is the share price has fallen about 40%. But if you put in some reasonable assumptions for the company's growth prospects and its profitability, you get a valuation of about $1.5 billion and still trading at $2.1 billion, and that's after the 40% fall. So while there were some extremely overpriced companies before. Those companies have fallen a lot, but they're still expensive. They might not be extremely expensive, but they're still expensive. The topic of today's discussion was overpriced stocks, and it's definitely the case that there are still plenty of those around.
Even after the recent
correct? Even after the recent fall in the market, that's right.
What other services do you provide there at
RogerMontgomery.com is the blog where investors can ask questions and read articles or columns that we've written. We write about two a day. At MontInvest.com, that's at the website for Montgomery Investment Management, which is our funds management business. And we manage about $1.5 billion for investors around Australia through, we have some domestic funds and we also have some global funds. And they're different to the extent that they have the ability to hold cash. And so we care very much about the preservation of investors' capital and protecting it. And they're also different to the extent that we're what's called an all capitalization manager. So we don't focus just on big companies or just on small companies. We have the flexibility to investigate opportunities right across the market capitalization spectrum. So we're just looking for high quality businesses, and we don't think high quality is unique to large companies or small companies. There are high quality companies of all different sizes, and we've got the flexibility to be able to invest in any and all of them.
Can internationals invest in your funds?
Yes, we're in the process of launching in the United. We have an office in New York, and we're in the process of launching a global long-short fund for overseas investors called Montica. And it takes advantage not only of businesses that we think are high quality and cheap, but we also short sell those companies that we think have poor thematics, or, for example, there might be a misperception about the quality of management or the quality of the balance sheet or the quality of the company. So we're able to sell short companies that we think are overpriced or overvalued, and we think they're going to fall because, for example, there might be a deterioration in their prospects. So you might know, you know, for example, it would have been very, very hard to pick when Carl Benz drove past you in the late 1800s. It would have been very hard to pick the winning car manufacturer, but you were pretty sure the blacksmith was going to go broke. And so what we can do is we can short the blacksmiths of the world.
Very clever. And can anyone invest in that?
Yes, they can. We have a domestic version of that fund that local investors can invest in. And we also have a global offering for international investors. And we're about to launch one in the United States as well. The other thing to note is that we have a global fund that's listed on the stock exchange under the code MOGL, Mogul. And so investors can buy those shares directly or those units directly through ComSec or E-Trade or whoever their, or NabTrade, whoever their online broker is. And they're listed. So that's the Montgomery Global Fund, and that's listed on the Australian Stock Exchange.
All right. And what's the website for that again?
Well, the code, the ASX code is MOGL, Mogul. If you were going to buy those shares after receiving advice, of course, you would use your online broker to access the share price.
All right. Well, thanks very much for explaining the other part of what you do. And I suppose thanks very much for taking the call and keeping us up to date with what's going on in the world and explaining a bit about overpriced stocks today.
It's always a pleasure, Anne. Lovely to talk to you again. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.